It's Wednesday, December 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, President-elect Trump decides on arguably his most important cabinet position.
I don't want China dictating to me, and this was a call put into me. I didn't make the call.
China is upset over Trump possibly changing the One China policy. Also ahead, American Muslims concerned about Trump and a monster calls. In the movies, that is. It's all on today's International Edition. There is mixed reaction to President-elect Donald Trump's pick for Secretary of State, with some current and former officials praising ExxonMobil Chairman and Chief Executive Officer Rex Tillerson, while others are expressing concern over his ties to Russia. Tillerson, friendly with Russia's president, has spent his 41-year career at the same oil company. Trump said Tuesday Tillerson's knowledge of running a global company is crucial to successfully leading the State Department. It was thought Trump would be compelled to select someone else, such as former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, because of the requisite Republican support in the Senate for Tillerson appears shaky. The VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman has been following developments, which he shared a short time ago with International Edition's Sarah Williams.
There are members of the Senate of both political parties who are voicing some concerns. That said, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Corker, which will be holding the confirmation hearing, has already committed to holding that hearing for Rex Tillerson in early January, in other words, weeks before President-elect Trump is even inaugurated. That said, there are senators on that committee, and Republicans only have a one-vote majority in that committee. For instance, Marco Rubio has said that that he has concerns that the next Secretary of State must be free of potential conflicts of interest. And if one Republican senator were to vote against Rex Tillerson in committee, or indeed if three Republican senators were to vote against him on the Senate floor, then he would not be confirmed.
Now, is this because of Mr. Tillerson's friendship or relationship with Russia and with Russian President Vladimir Putin?
That certainly seems to be where the most concern lies. Tillerson is the head of ExxonMobil, a corporate titan that has energy interests around the globe, including in Russia. And indeed, Mr. Tillerson knows Vladimir Putin, I believe has received an award from Vladimir Putin. And this comes at a time when Congress is in an uproar, as it is, over allegations that maybe the Kremlin was meddling in America's election last month. So the timing of the Tillerson nomination is certainly interesting, given the larger currents and the political winds surrounding the United States and Russia at this moment.
Has Mr. Trump made it known why he selected Mr. Tillerson? Because Tillerson, as he has had a long career at ExxonMobil, but he has not had any government or diplomatic experience.
Well, during the campaign, President-elect Trump made clear that he believed that American businessmen, that the titans of American industry, were those best equipped to help lead the country. He regularly railed against Washington bureaucrats and said that his business buddies were the most brilliant people who could help lead the country. He is holding true to that, not just in terms of the Secretary of State pick, but in many other areas of government as well. If you look at his nominations so far, they come primarily from U.S. business or from the military.
VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Senator Bob Corker called Tillerson a very impressive individual, and he said the Senate Foreign Relations Committee will hold a hearing on his nomination in early January. His statement indicated that the hearing would be held before Trump's inauguration, which takes place January 20th. Time now for us to look at what's trending online. Michael Lippin joins us for that. And Michael, I understand one of today's top Twitter trends is rather a sobering one.
It is, Jim. Thank you. Yes, we're talking about hashtag Aleppo. It's the northern Syrian city that has seen large-scale human suffering as pro-government forces get close to driving out a years-long rebellion. Now, one Twitter user who's getting a lot of attention with hashtag Aleppo is Bana Alabed. She's a 7-year-old girl living in the collapsing rebel stronghold of eastern Aleppo. Her mother, Fateme, has been tweeting on her daughter's behalf, and the messages are rather heartbreaking. In the past day, those messages have included the following from Bana: "My dad is injured now. I am crying." And then a few hours later: "My name is Bana. I'm 7 years old. I'm talking to the world now live from East Aleppo. This is my last moment to either live or die." Now, there's been some skepticism on Twitter, with some people saying the account might be fake. But Twitter has actually verified it, and Bana's mother, Fateme, who is an English teacher, has actually been interviewed from Aleppo by CNN and the New York Times in recent days.
Well, let's switch gears to U.S. politics. You know, it's always busy at Trump Tower in New York these days, with people coming to meet President-elect Trump. Forget for a moment the Secretary of State. There was a surprise visitor today who got some Twitter buzz. What's that all about?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we are talking about Kanye West, the American rapper, record producer, and fashion designer who's got even more Twitter followers than Trump. He's got 26 million to Trump's 17 million. Kanye West was at Trump Tower and had a 15-minute meeting with the president-elect. Took a lot of people by surprise after they came down from the elevators and met the press. Trump stood there next to Kanye, saying that they were old friends and they just talked about life. Kanye, as he was standing next to the president-elect, didn't say much at all to the press as they threw questions his way, except to say that he was happy to get a picture taken with Trump. It looked a little bit awkward. But a few hours later, Kanye West actually broke his silence. He said on Twitter that he went to meet with Trump to discuss multicultural issues, including bullying, supporting teachers, modernizing curriculums, and violence in Chicago. He said he feels it's important to have a direct line of communication with the future president if we truly want change. Jim, back to you.
All right. Thank you so much, Michael, for that analysis. You can follow Michael on Twitter, if you wish, at Michael_Lippin. Our account for International Edition is at VOA_IE. I'm out there as well at VOA Stevenson. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia: Myanmar reporter killed while investigating illegal logging. Human Rights Watch says Myanmar military burned hundreds of Rohingya buildings. Pakistan forms special maritime force to secure Chinese-built port and projects. Indonesian Christians on edge at Ahok trial. Xinhua says China to appoint river chiefs to fight pollution. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and a whole lot more at the voanews.com website. And take the news with you. If you have a smartphone, try out our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The state-run Chinese publication Global Times said President-elect Donald Trump is naive to think that he can use the One China policy as a bargaining chip to win economic benefits from China. And it warned if the United States gave up a nearly four-decade policy supporting Taiwan's independence and wantonly selling weapons to Taiwan, that China would have no grounds to partner with Washington, and that could lead to military action against Taiwan. China was responding to Mr. Trump's Fox News Sunday interview, in which he said he felt compelled to take a congratulatory phone call December 1st from Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen following his election victory.
"I don't want China dictating to me, and this was a call put into me. I didn't make the call. And it was a call, very short call, saying, 'Congratulations, sir, on the victory.' It was a very nice call. And why should some other nation be able to say, 'I can't take a call'? I think it actually would have been very disrespectful, to be honest with you, not taking it."
A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman called the One China policy the basis for bilateral relations and urged the incoming Trump administration to understand the sensitivity of the Taiwan issue. Gordon Chang, a China analyst for the website The Daily Beast, he's also author of the book The Coming Collapse of China, tells VOA's Victor Beatty there is a reassessment underway within the Trump transition team of the one-child policy.
This call between Trump and President Tsai Ing-wen of Taiwan was prearranged. There was a lot of work that went in by both respective staffs. So this was not some off-the-cuff event. The question is how far Trump will take this. We just don't know. In his comments with Fox News Sunday, it appears that he was using the Taiwan relationship as a bargaining chip. But we know many of his advisors really want a redirection of American policy, which I think would be a good thing.
A number of analysts are quoted as saying that this move would be counterproductive. The negatives far outweigh the positives in terms of China's possible reaction that would deteriorate relations and cause an adverse impact across Asia.
Well, there certainly will be a deterioration in China-U.S. ties. But we got to remember that the current policy has not been producing good results for the United States or the international community. And I'm not saying that what Trump will do will work, but I will say that the current policy was guaranteed to fail. So we need to have a new direction, and I'm optimistic that we're going in with the correct approach.
One analyst says that when the decision to end a decades-long practice, i.e. the One China policy, is made with so little warning and clear communication, it raises the likelihood of misunderstanding and miscalculation and sets the stage for a crisis between the U.S. and China over Taiwan.
Well, there could be a crisis, but we're heading toward a crisis anyway. What Trump has done, he's unnerved the Chinese, he's challenged them, and that's a good thing because the Chinese leaders have challenged his two predecessors in their first months in office. So I don't see the rule which says only Beijing gets to upset relations. I think it's a good thing that we're taking the initiative.
Mike Green, a former China advisor to then-President George W. Bush, said ending the One China policy would be a mistake, but criticized the Obama administration for being too accommodating toward Beijing, thus reducing its leverage. Donald Trump's talk of a possible registry has led some fear among American Muslims. Several organizations are working for immigrant rights, and they're planning a march Monday in Washington. Thousands have signed up to peacefully demonstrate their message, starting at the Justice Department and ending at the White House. International Edition's Lori London talks about it with one of the group's activists, Roxana Moon. She's the director of strategy at DRUM, a multi-generational organization of low-wage South Asian immigrant workers and youth in New York City.
The march to the White House and Department of Justice, basically we are asking for the Obama administration to completely shut down the NSEERS program, which was a program that started after 9/11 that required Muslim men and boys above the age of 16 from 24 Muslim majority countries to go register at Federal Plaza or their immigration headquarters if they were not citizens. I mean, we've seen what the clear impact of that was for our organization, where we had to go and like organize people who had their loved ones missing. We started getting calls after 9/11 saying that my brother, my husband, my son left for work 3 days ago and they haven't been back home since. And it's this kind of thing that happened during like NSEERS back then, where you had 80,000 people have to go register and 13,000 people were deported and zero number of people were found with any sort of violent extremist associations at all. But the impact of that on our communities meant mass deportations, families being torn apart, women having to, you know, take care of the household with the breadwinner missing and have to pay rent and face, you know, having to find a way to get their loved ones back, which often did not happen. So this program can easily be ended by the Obama administration to give groups on the ground like us and people in our community the fighting chance we need to be able to mobilize and organize and get support to prevent anything that Trump may wish to restart once he is president.
Have you reached out to President Obama at all up until this point?
We have been collecting petitions. We are going to deliver on the morning of about 300,000 petitions that we've collected from people around the country who demand no to any kind of Muslim registration and to end the MCRS program. So we're going to deliver those petitions directly to the White House before the march begins. So we have been in engagement with and in conversation with people to ask the president to get rid of MCRS.
Well, there have been certainly a lot of people that have really come out in support of your effort. I know there is at least one Jewish activist that said that is among thousands of Americans vowing to register as Muslims as if they were, if Mr. Trump does follow through with some sort of registry. So it would appear you're getting a lot of support.
We do. We do have a lot of support from, I think, even more than thousands, but really millions of people around the country, both from people who are going to be directly impacted by this kind of program if it is re-engaged against by the Trump administration, and by allies who also come from communities that in the past have a long history of facing severe racial and religious discrimination, and completely empathize and understand exactly what the consequences these kinds of programs have on a community. So there's a lot of support for it, which is why we are asking for the Obama administration to actually end the NCRS program once and for all, because it gives us the room and the window of opportunity to really bring all these communities together to leverage our political, social power to be able to prevent the Trump administration from restarting the NCRS program and re-weaponizing it. It's really just a fighting chance that we need to be able to prevent this from happening once and for all.
Roxana Moon, Director of Strategy at the DRUM, a multi-generational organization of low-wage South Asian immigrant workers in New York. So many facets to this transition to the Trump administration. You can find many stories on our website at voanews.com, and be sure to follow all the latest developments on Twitter at @VOA_IE. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. A new film based on the acclaimed children's novel, A Monster Calls, opens this month. As International Edition's David Byrd tells us, this film tells the story of a boy coming to terms with his mother's terminal illness.
Connor O'Malley has been plagued by nightmares. The 13-year-old shy, artistic boy is also the victim of his school bully. At 7 minutes past midnight, Connor keeps hearing a voice call to him from his bedroom window, which overlooks a churchyard with a giant yew tree. One night, Connor meets a monster, a massive tangle of roots and branches in human form. The monster tells Connor that he summoned it, and it will help him by telling him three short stories. In return, Connor must tell stories of his own. As Connor and the monster continue to meet, almost always at 12:07 a.m., we learn that Connor's mother, played by Felicity Jones, has terminal cancer. Connor is forced to move in with his cold, emotionally detached grandmother, played by Sigourney Weaver. The monster's stories are intended to teach the boy about life, but they continue to have increasing consequences, including the smashing of his grandmother's living room and the attacking of his nemesis at school. Liam Neeson provides the voice of the monster.
I don't know if you've read the book by Patrick Nass. It's an extraordinary, it really is like a classic book. And it just, you know, you close over the last page, and certainly with me, it just really gets you thinking about aspects of your life.
When Connor tells his own nightmare, he begins to confront his feelings about his mother's imminent death. The monster reveals that he has been sent to help Connor heal, and when the boy accepts his mother's terminal illness, she dies in the hospital at 7 minutes after midnight. Newcomer Lewis McDougall plays Connor.
I guess really I would use like experiences in my own life to try and understand what Connor's feeling, but you know, also there was the fact that I had to do an English accent, which I'm Scottish, of course, and so I had to do a bit of dialect coaching for that, and I actually had a couple of weeks of rehearsals with everybody, including Liam, and so that was very helpful.
Neeson says that McDougall embodied the nuances and the emotions Connor experiences in a way not usually seen in child actors.
Terrific kid, and what a performance he gives. I mean, I've made quite a few movies with quite a few children. This boy is brilliant. He really is. It's a brilliant performance.
Sigourney Weaver says that she, director J.A. Bayona, and Felicity Jones did their homework to make sure that their performances were true to life.
You know, Felicity and I and Bayona, we did meet with doctors in England, cancer specialists. We also went to hospice to see what the challenges of taking care of someone in the last stages of cancer would be. So we did kind of fill up on that. And I know she also met with women survivors of cancer.
A Monster Calls is based on the book by Patrick Ness, who also wrote the Chaos Walking series for children. The film premiered at the Toronto Film Festival and will have a wide U.S. release beginning December 23rd. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition, and you can find us at our website any time of the day or night you like, voanews.com. Also, check us out on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Diane Gao, who's been keeping our trains running on time. Let's take a look. Yeah, they're on time. Engineer Jimmy Cook keeping the mechanics going. I'm Jim Stevenson here in Washington. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
With the stroke of a pen and a decisive vote by Colombia's Congress, the longest-running conflict in the Western Hemisphere ended. On November 24th, Colombia's president, Juan Manuel Santos, and Rodrigo Londoño, commander of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, signed a peace agreement, and on November 30th, Colombia's Congress approved the accord. It was a difficult process and a long time coming. 4 years of difficult negotiations led to the first signing of an agreement in late September, which both sides hoped would end Colombia's 52-year internal conflict. But 6 days later, the Colombian people rejected the agreement by a narrow margin. Many voters felt it did not go far enough to hold FARC members accountable for their past actions. So it was back to the negotiating table for both sides, where a revised version of the document was agreed upon. On November 30th, Colombia's Congress voted to approve the revised accord. It now includes a requirement that FARC members declare and hand over all of their assets to pay for reparations to victims. FARC members must also declare the full truth about their involvement in drug trafficking. The agreement further defined the restrictions of liberty for those who committed crimes against humanity, and it clarified that the accord will not be incorporated into Colombia's constitution, as had been previously proposed. The United States welcomes the approval of the peace accord, which we believe will help achieve a just and lasting peace for all Colombians, said Secretary of State John Kerry. The Colombian people deserve enormous credit for their persistence, commitment, and focus in this endeavor. Special recognition must go to President Juan Manuel Santos, who has earned the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts, he said. Our Paz Colombia initiative, aimed at supporting continued institutional development, aiding conflict victims, removing landmines, combating narcotics, and addressing remaining security issues, is designed to help our Colombian partners achieve the lasting peace that they have fought so hard for and that they so richly deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.